Good afternoon, everyone. This is Whitney with the Conferences for Women, and thanks so much for joining us for The Zen of Being Digital with Alisa Sherman. If you are on Twitter, I encourage you to follow along at MassWomen, at PennWomen, or at TexasWomen. And Alisa's at Alisa Sherman, which is AlisaSherman. So, Alisa is a web pioneer, an award-winning author of 10 books, an international speaker and teacher of technology for our work and our lives. She's championed women in business and tech since the early 90s and traveled around the world speaking about women's issues and the intersections of technology, work, and life. In 1995, she started the first woman-owned internet company, CyberGirl, Inc., and the first global internet networking organization for women, Web Girls International. Newsweek named her one of the top people who matter most on the internet. Fast Company called her one of the most powerful women in technology. Her books include Power Tools for Women in Business, Mom Incorporated, and Social Media Engagement for Dummies. So welcome.
Hello. Hi, Whitney, and hi, everybody. I love this topic, the Zen of Being Digital, and I want to start off telling a couple of stories. So picture this. I'm at the grocery store, and I'm dropping things. I'm dropping cans of food. I'm dropping my wallet when I go to pay. I'm dropping my credit card as I'm handing it to the cashier. And I'm starting to panic a little. I mean, what does it mean when you start dropping things? You just can't hold on to things. Is it a stroke? Is it a brain tumor? I mean, literally, I'm panicking and I'm apologizing as I drop something else. I look down at my hands. Why can I not grip these things? And I see I'm clutching my iPhone. I didn't even realize my iPhone was in my hand. I was so used to having the iPhone in my hand as I walked down the aisles of the grocery store that it had become a part of me and was preventing me to hold on to things. I don't know, does that sound familiar to anybody? Another story. I'm in Sweden. The year is 1999. I'm walking through a cafeteria, and I notice a strange thing. There are people with cellular phones on their table. Now, if you remember 1999 and the cell phone, they were the size of an ice cream sandwich. And I looked at that, and I just shook my head and I said, there is no way that we in the United States would ever have a cell phone at our table. And my last little story, see if this one sounds familiar. I'm visiting one of my best friends. I love her. We both love technology, but I haven't seen her for a really long time. And we're sitting in her living room, and I'm telling her about my life, catching up, and I look over, and she's staring into her iPad. And she doesn't stop. And it breaks my heart. We somehow have surrendered to our technology.
So it's pretty bad. Can you give us some insights into how bad it's really become?
Sure. I'm not big on statistics, but I do have a few statistics that can shed some light on where we are as a society in relationship to our mobile devices. So in 2010, now mind you, this is already 4 years ago, in 2010, Nokia came out with a report that said that mobile phone users cannot leave their phone alone for more than 6 minutes at a time and check their phone up to 150 times a day. Now, that those statistics have been questioned by a lot of people who then go and analyze, what are we doing on our phones? And I'll go into some of that in a moment. But Real Simple magazine surveyed women recently about their smartphones. 69% of them said they sleep with them in their bedroom. I would say a show of hands, but right now I can also already imagine the virtual hands being raised when I asked, how many of you have your phone in your bedroom? And by the way, my hand is raised. I don't feel good about that. 68% of women keep their phone close to them during dinner. 76% of them look at their phone at least once an hour. Ask yourself, is that you? Now, believe it or not, there's a term that has just come up in the last several years called no-mo-phobia. No-mo-phobia. And that stands for no mobile phone phobia. They've literally come up with a way of describing that panic that we feel when we forget our smartphones. Nomophobia. I don't know about you, but that's a little scary to me. I really think that we're succumbing to this thing that I call techno peer pressure. So even when we say, I'm not going to be on my phone. I'm going to leave my phone turned off. And then our friends are on their phones, and we feel like it's this permission that we have to actually get back on our phone, because, you know, it's okay because everyone else is. So it's this techno peer pressure as well that influences us.
So a question for you is, it's a lot of time, a lot of checking our devices. So what exactly are we checking and what do we really need to be doing?
Well, part of this list of items came from people talking about the Nokia study and how is it possible that you're checking it 150 times in a day. But think about it. Our smartphone is now far more than a telephone. So it's not as if we're grabbing our phone for a phone call. In fact, we probably are rarely grabbing our phone for a phone call these days. But we check our phone to check time, to look at our calendar, or to schedule something. We're checking text messages far more than we're actually checking voicemail messages, but we also check our voicemail. We're looking at our email. We're surfing the web, so we're looking at websites. We're probably Googling a lot more in a day than we probably ever did 5 or 10 years ago. Music, we're listening to music, or we're listening to podcasts. We're watching video. We're downloading files. We're uploading files. We're taking pictures. We're checking or making reminders or checking those notifications that keep on flashing. And, oh, by the way, yeah, we do a phone call. I mean, that's a lot of checking.
So everyone who's called in today was obviously intrigued by the topic of simplifying and streamlining their tech life. So what are some things that we can do to change what we're doing?
Well, I have to give you some context in terms of my background. I've been online since 1987. I've been consulting companies about the Internet since 1990. And I've been not an early adopter of all these new fangled technologies, but sort of a late early adopter. I remember in the 90s when the headlines used to read, Internet addiction, we're all addicted to the Internet. And I would just poo-poo them and say, we're not addicted. We have control. We can make choices. Well, fast forward a decade plus later, and I'm I'm actually finding myself using the word addicted now. Things are very different. When it was a desktop computer and you couldn't lug it around with you, or even when it was a laptop computer and it was so big, I just never felt that compulsion, that addiction to jump onto it. And yet, with the smartphone or the tablet computer that is so lightweight, that's with me at all times, that sometimes I clutch and don't even know I'm holding it, the word addiction keeps on creeping up. And that's a little bit scary. So if you think in those terms, though, what we can do is assess how we are acting with and interacting with our gadgets, with our technology, and admit if we have a problem. And if you don't want to use the word addiction, certainly consider the word compulsion. Are you compulsively glancing down at your smartphone, even at the dinner table or at a restaurant or in the presence of friends or family members? Is it within arm's reach? Is it somewhere where you keep wanting to go to it? Is it always on? So admitting that you might have a compulsion issue when it comes to your smartphone is a good step. It's that awareness. So be aware. Be aware of how you are attached to your device, if you are. And really the first step, and this is something that I was struggling with, and I have to admit, I go back and forth and still struggle, but turn the darn thing off. I mean, I tend to keep it on 24/7. And I've moved my charging station out of my bedroom into a separate room. And I come into the house and I start to charge it and I try not to look at it again. Because there's really no reason after work hours to be compulsively checking. So the thing I like to say is leave it, hide it, and forget it. And that seems to work for me, although I do slip. I have to admit I do slip.
So give us some more tips, because I know everyone's really eager to walk away from today's call with some actionable items that they can really put into movement around this topic.
Well, you got to think about it like a diet. Now, there are some downsides to a diet. I mean, how many of us have tried a diet in terms of eating habits and have failed because we've tried a fad. We've tried to do something that's not sustainable. But when you start to change your habits, such as portion control, I mean, that tends to be one of those key things that you do when you are trying to watch what you eat, is think of portion control. So in a way, it's technology portion control. Establish for yourself what you feel are the acceptable amounts of usage. And then set achievable goals. Like if I were to say to myself, I'm going to cut out my iPhone cold turkey. Well, some people do this. They call it a technology sabbatical. There are actually camps and retreats now that are specifically devoted to getting people to turn off their digital devices and to go a couple of days without them at all. Digital detox, they've got something called Camp Grounded that it's all about being disconnected from technology. We would not have thought of this 10 years ago. But you need to set these achievable goals and maybe even have a tech buddy who can help you stay off of your devices. And look for the fact that when you do these things, you will have some positive outcomes. And some of those positive outcomes are healthier relationships with your technology, but also with others, with people around you. They might not even be telling you that they're offended by your use of constantly looking down at your smartphone. I didn't tell my best friend. I use her as an example. She doesn't know I'm doing this. And in fact, probably all my girlfriends right now, if they're listening, they're going, oh my God, is that me? It might be you. But also you have a better relationship with yourself when you're not compulsively reaching for those devices. So, you know, I can talk about a couple of pieces of software and applications that are out there, which you could download today. And it's sort of ironic. I'm telling you to unplug. But, hey, download this application because there's an app for that. There's actually an app for the Android called Menthal, M-E-N-T-H-A-L. And it's like I said, it's for Android. It helps you see what's consuming your attention on your phone, and it tracks how much time you're spending on your phone. And I think sometimes when we tangibly see the numbers, it's eye-opening. The iPhone version, something similar but also a little bit different, is called Pause, P-A-U-S-E, Pause for the iPhone. It tracks your time offline when you're not using your phone. It also makes a game of it so you can compete with others to see who can stay offline the longest. And then for the computer, I've been using for many years something called Rescue Time, and it monitors your computer usage and your productivity. So every week I get a report saying, here's how long you spent on communication, here's how long you spent on creativity, and it breaks it down based on the software I'm using. So it tracks how often I'm in email or using Photoshop or using PowerPoint, and then it parses that out as productivity or very unproductive. So those are three pieces of software. That third one was called the Rescue Time. Software that actually tries to help you address this. Again, it's a little bit ironic that I'm saying, use this software and get offline. But sometimes we need tools.
So, Alisa, what are... We want to have a healthier relationship with technology, so we're in charge, we feel in control. How can we do that?
Well, I think it comes down to setting limits and designating boundaries. I mentioned earlier, I took the charging station out of my bedroom and put it into a different room. I've been hearing more and more from people who say my charging station for my devices is right at the door. So when I come in to my house, I plug them in and I don't touch them again until I leave my house the next morning on my way to work, and I unplug them and then go. So what are the boundaries in your home, in your space? What are the boundaries in your workspace or zones, if you will? I've heard families passing around a basket to their family members to put their devices in them and then setting the basket aside so they could sit down at dinner and actually speak to one another. So it's creating that space, because what ends up happening, and this has happened to me, when I'm really diligent about this practice, I mean, this is when you talk about Zen and you talk about any kind of ritual, it needs to be a practice, something that you do all the time. And this practice creates space. When you are not touching those devices at all times and filling your time with, oh my gosh, I got to check Facebook, see it. Oh, has anyone tweeted to me? Oh, what, has anyone emailed me? You end up creating a lot more space for all those things that you say you don't have time to do.
So what are some small things that we can do that will help us to make big changes in our lives as it relates to our technology use?
So think about alternative behaviors. I think sometimes we can trick our minds into doing something else and not wanting to or needing to check our devices. Write a letter. When's the last time that any of us have written, handwritten, longhand, a letter and then folded it up, put it in an envelope, put on a stamp, addressed it, and taken it to the mailbox or post office? I mean, that process now seems so antiquated. We used to call it snail mail. Now we call it, huh? Who does that anymore? But write a letter to someone. I spoke about this topic recently in Florida at Enterprising Women, and I just got a handwritten letter from one of the women in the audience. And I've got to tell you, it was an amazing thing just to have a tangible letter written in pen. It sounds old-fashioned, but write a letter. Wear a watch. I mean, how many of you are wearing watches now? I haven't worn my watch since my phone tells me the time. But wear a watch to get back out of that habit. Although some people would argue, don't wear a watch and simply don't check the time. We're too obsessed with time. Make art. I don't know about you, but a box of crayons and some glitter glue, and I can go crazy with that. And that puts me back in touch with a frame of mind, a state of mind, like a childlike state of mind, which is way, way far removed from this desire to be connected to my tech. Or play. I have a 7-year-old daughter, and I watch her sense of play, and I am grateful that she still runs outside and kicks a ball around or jumps rope. And I cringe when I see her sitting down at the sofa with an electronic device. I see myself, she's like a mini-me reflection. And so I try to get out with her and jump rope with her and kick the ball around. But you don't need to have a child around to go outside and play or just take a walk. And take a walk without your phone in hand. You don't need that phone. And if you need a camera, we need to go back to grabbing those disposable cameras or some alternative non-digital camera and use those for a change. We've become ultra-reliant on our iPhone just to take a photo.
So I know we're winding down, and before we do, you are a strong believer in meditation as it relates to shifting our compulsiveness around technology use. So can you share a little bit with us about that?
Well, I have to confess, Whitney, I'm very, very new to meditation. I have been told for the last 15 years that I could benefit from meditation, and I ignored it. I mean, it went in one ear and out the other, and every once in a while I'd go, meditation, yeah, maybe. It just seemed so foreign to me, but I just started a meditation practice, and it's a little rough around the edges. But what really helped me understand the benefits of meditation, it came from a book called Use Your Mind to Change Your Brain. The author is Rebecca Gladding, MD. And I'm not very scientific, but I'll try to paraphrase what I believe I understand her to be saying about meditating. So right now, in our current state, when we are not meditating, and when we have this onslaught of information and the technology, the compulsiveness, our brains are focused on the me center of the brain, where you take things personally and it's all about you, and you are accessing incorrectly and far too readily the fear portion of your brain, that fight or flight area, and also the body sense of your brain, where that fear becomes a physical anxiety. So if you are feeling like you're in a state of panic, anxiety, sort of this nonspecific, I don't know why I'm so stressed, that's because you're very focused in the knee center. Now, when you meditate, you're more able to access what's called the assessment center. If you're focused on me, you cannot properly assess the situations that are happening around you. But after meditating, you can access the assessment center right away. You're removed from that me center. The me center relaxes, and so you are no longer in fear, and you're no longer in that body sense where you're physically feeling your fear. So you are better able to look at what's happening around you, process what's happening around you, not take it so personally. All of those things contribute to a better sense of well-being. When you have a better sense of overall well-being, you no longer have that need for compulsion to fill the panic, to fill the empty spaces, to quell the loneliness. If you have a better overall sense of well-being, when you reach for your technology, it's for practical, sensible uses, not to try to solve something that's not actually a problem or to be a balm over sort of a wound that you're feeling that shouldn't actually be there. So
having thought of that and processed that in my own brain, I came to the conclusion that, oh my gosh, meditation sounds like a great thing to insert into my life so that I can better process everything that happens to me, you know, as a mom, as a businesswoman, as a person, as a human being.
So I love that you just mentioned being a mom, because we received a question from via Twitter. And if anyone else who's listening is interested in submitting a question, you can use @masswomen, @10women, or @texaswomen. And pending time, we'd love to answer your question during this call as well. So the question we got was, what if your phone is how your kids, parents, and spouse communicate with you? My phone is not relegated to work needs.
Oh, well, gosh, my phone is the all-purpose Swiss Army knife of life. So I get that. I think having it in proximity but not in your hand and not outside of your bag, you can have the ringer set to specific rings that tell you it's my child, it's my husband or partner, and keep it in your bag or in a bag. If you don't have a bag for it, and if you're not one carrying a purse around or a bag, get your technology bag and stick it in there so it's not physically out in the open and just waiting for you to glance at it. But in that bit of a hide it piece, but still have it in close proximity. I mean, I know for myself, I purchased an iPhone for my husband because I wanted to be in better touch with him, especially because I travel a lot. And I can't tell you how furious I get when he doesn't check the darn thing or have it anywhere within earshot. If you are using it as a connecting device for family and even for emergency situations, just keep it in a case of some kind and don't hold it in your hand at all moments.
So create a little distance from it.
Yes, and a little bit of visual distance, if not audio distance. That visual removal helps to stop you from glancing at it. Literally, if it's open, face up on your desk or table or wherever you are, your eye will start shooting over to it to see, is there something important? Is somebody messaging me? Do I need to know? But if you just put it aside into that special bag made for that occasion, I think it'd be helpful. I really do.
So we are running out of time, so would love for you just to remind listeners where they can find you online.
Well, they can certainly find me on Twitter, where I do spend an inordinate amount of time. So twitter.com/my full name, Aliza Sherman, A-L-I-Z as in zebra, A-S-H-E-R-M-A-N. And you can find me at alizasherman.com as well. I do blog occasionally, or you can subscribe to my email newsletter where I give tips on using apps for very specific practical uses. So it's so interesting that I love technology. I'm a tech passionista and a digital diva, but I always look for practical uses. If you use it as a tool to improve something that you're doing, that's great. Just don't overuse it, don't abuse it, and don't let it take you over.
Love it. Thank you so much for joining us today. And to everyone who's listening, we will be posting a recap online in the next week. So subscribe to our newsletter or keep checking the website or checking us out on social media if you want to listen to this again or share it with someone else in your network. So thank you so much for joining us.